Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of President Obama's address to the nation, outlining his executive actions on immigration reform. Kamal Esahab, an immigration policy attorney at the National Immigration Law Center, joins us to discuss the scope of the president's actions and how they will be implemented, as well as how many immigrants from the 11 million living in the shadows will benefit from Obama's just-announced initiatives, and how much opposition these proposals will face from the Republicans, who are already angry at what they see as executive overreach. Then we will analyze the president's proposals further with Martha Arevalo, who is the executive director of the Central American Resource Center, CARACEN, who specializes in immigration advocacy work, community outreach, and Latino strategic communications. She joins us to discuss the likely impact of Obama's initiatives on the community she serves and what the reaction is so far from those who might benefit from immigration reform and those who will be left out. Then finally, we will go to Mexico City for an update on the massive demonstrations coinciding with National Revolution Day, in which hundreds of thousands have taken to the streets to protest the disappearance of 43 students at the hands of a drug gang allied with a local politician. Dr. Andre Dorsey Ramos, a researcher at the Communication Sciences Department at the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana in Mexico and the ombudsman for Public Broadcasting Channel 22, joins us to explain how Mexicans have reached the breaking point in their anger and frustration at rampant corruption and the culture of impunity among Mexico's political elite, highlighted by the recent appearance on Mexican television of the president's wife, a soap opera star, indignant that she should have to explain the inside deal she got from a crony of her husband's on a $7 million mansion. And joining us now is Kamal Esahab, who is an immigration policy attorney at the National Immigration Law Center, who engages in advocacy and technical assistance relating to state and local enforcement of immigration law and access to legal status for immigrants. His advocacy focuses on the passage of the DREAM Act, implementation of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, and state and local enforcement of immigration law. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kamal Esahab.
Thank you for having me.
And Kamal, this speech that the president just gave struck me as being quite passionate and heartfelt on his part. What's your reaction?
Well, I mean, my sense was that it was a powerful speech. I think he conveyed the urgency of the need to act. He conveyed the pain suffered in immigrant communities. We have 1,000 deportations a day that tear families apart, tear, you know, husband from wife, son from daughter, son from parent. This is long overdue. This is something that should have been done, years ago. The president supported 2 million individuals under his watch, and we're hopeful that today marks a turn for the better in terms of his administration's handling of immigration.
So he seemed to want to frame his speech, at least starting out, by making the distinction, saying he wants to deport felons, not families. Do you think that he successfully conveyed that idea that that he doesn't think it's right for America to break up families, at the same time clearly deporting felons is something that that people won't argue with?
Well, I think he's trying to make the case that our current immigration system is harmful to U.S. citizens themselves. We have millions of kids whose parents are undocumented. Of the 11 million individuals who are undocumented, half of them have been here for more than 12 years. 60% of the undocumented population has been here more than a decade. So I think he made a strong, really powerful case that the undocumented population is deeply rooted here. It's your landscaper. It's the person who goes to church with you. It's your neighbor. It's the parent of that U.S. citizen who goes to school with your child. So I think he was trying to convey that the undocumented population are individuals that are parts of our community, and I think he did a good job of that.
We did mention that deportation of felons are up 80%, and I'm just wondering how much that is clouding the issue of all of these law-abiding people in the shadows who seem to be the real object of the president's initiative here this evening. I mean, for example, here in California, we had a violent shootout where two law enforcement officers were killed by a felon with a long rap sheet who had been deported a number of times and at this point, I don't imagine he'll be deported since he's up on capital charges. But how much is that an issue, do you think?
Well, I mean, all the studies that I've seen show that, the immigrants there's this perception out there that immigrants are, criminals. But all the studies that I've seen, show the exact opposite, that, rates of criminality among immigrants are noticeably lower than they are for citizens. I think that might be an issue in the perception of the public, but that's not, that's not an issue from the evidence that I've seen. I mean, look, the system is, fundamentally flawed. When you have people who've been here for decades who don't have an opportunity to get in a line, to, come forward and contribute in the way that they want, to pay more in taxes, to acquire higher paying jobs, to pay, to work, above the table so that they're not undermining American workers. So this is, it's a fundamental problem when you have that happening on a systemic basis. And, the president's actions tonight are one step in the direction of fixing that. I mean, let's not forget, we are still going to have millions of people after tonight who are very deeply rooted in the United States, but who may not have a U.S. citizen family member, or they may not have a U.S. citizen child, so they don't qualify for this relief that the president mentioned. Which for us just tells us that there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make sure that everyone who's willing to contribute and willing to play by the rules and wants to be here gets an opportunity to get right by the law and be fully integrated in their community.
Again, I'm speaking with Kamal Esaheb, who is an immigration policy attorney at the National Immigration Law Center, who engages in advocacy and technical assistance relating to state and local enforcement of immigration law and access to legal status for immigrants. His advocacy focuses on passage of the DREAM Act, implementation of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, and state and local enforcement of immigration law. And while the president did talk about how the deportations that have taken place on his watch, and he also mentioned border security, how much more secure the border is than it ever has been. I don't think he didn't point out the enormous amount of resources that go to law enforcement, resources that go to border patrol the immigration, the ICE roundups, etc. So that, is there a chance? I mean, he didn't mention this, but is there a chance that the enormous resources spent on rounding up immigrants in this country could be transferred to more useful purposes in terms of law enforcement, in stopping terrorists, et cetera, as opposed to going after these law-abiding citizens living in the shadows?
Yeah, I mean, we are spending, I mean, this is a fact that, baffles me. We're spending $18 billion a year, every year, on immigration enforcement, $18 billion every year. Now, to put that in some perspective, that is more than the $14 billion that we're spending on all other federal law enforcement activities combined. So that's add up the FBI, DEA, Secret Service, and all federal law enforcement agencies comes in at less than you know, immigration. Now, there's only so much the president can do about that, because Congress sets the budget for government agencies, and Congress has, you know, set the budget at this high level for, you know, reasons that maybe we don't have time to discuss. But what the president could do is refocus the resources that he's been given to things that are of more serious concern. So rather than going after workers, for example, he can go after criminal enterprises, drug traffickers, smugglers, people that are really doing our communities harm.
How about white-collar criminals on Wall Street?
Right, right. I mean, all of the above. And I think tonight's step, although it's you know, it's not clear, it's not super clear from the president's statement, because he's talking about mostly talking about providing, you know, an opportunity for people who are undocumented. But tonight's announcement is a step in that direction of focusing resources, because now what you're doing is you're taking, you know, these millions of individuals who are deeply rooted here, who've been working and want to contribute, you're taking them off at, you know, as potential targets for immigration enforcement. And you're letting immigration enforcement focus whatever resources Congress gives it on the real threats, on the criminal enterprises I was talking about. So tonight's, announcement isn't just an act of compassion by the president, which it certainly is, but it's also a good, smart use of government resources.
So in terms of the political passions and the polarization in this country, you mentioned gridlock in Washington, which is why the president feels he had to make these executive actions, because the immigration bill that passed the Senate has been stalled for over 500 days in the House, and they haven't even bothered to take a vote on it. And he keeps referring to that as a bipartisan bill. Of course, Republicans feel extremely sore at the moment, because they feel they just won an election and that they have a right to speak on this issue. Clearly they will speak soon. They have the powers of the purse string, and I believe we run out of money on December the 11th. So there will be some kind of a showdown. But of course, Senator Coburn, who's an old friend of the president's, they were colleagues when they were in the Senate together, warned today that the president's actions could provoke violence, which is, I think, a horrible specter, particularly when you consider how much and how many people in this country really hate President Obama in a way that's very disturbing and quite often racist. So that doesn't seem like a very helpful remark. But in general, I'm puzzled by the immigration issue in this country in terms of its politics, because its politics are all over the place. You have left-wing Latino organizations in bed with the Chamber of Commerce and left-wing unions in bed with the Minutemen. So it seems to be all over the place politically.
Well, I mean, it's definitely an interesting political, you know, an interesting issue politically in terms of the alliances that it brings together. But it's certainly an issue that's gotten significant public support. You know, poll after poll on immigration reform showed, you know, upwards of, you know, 70-80% of Americans feel that some opportunity has to be given, you know, to individuals who are undocumented to come forward, get right with the law, and just more fully contribute to their communities, and you know, make no mistake. I mean, tonight's speech is, you know, a big moment for, you know, immigrants and the immigrant community, but we've got a big fight on our hands. I think we are, you know, going to see opponents of this action try to attack it, try to undermine it, try to defund it. I think we're going to hear a lot of talk of impeachment. I think we're going to see attempts to make life difficult for the population that the president is protecting. We're going to see attempts to make life difficult for them at the state level. So we're going to have a big national conversation about this. You know, we're going to have people who are supportive of the president's action and people who are opposed to it. And I think that's going to, you know, set us up for a long interesting national dialogue about, who we are, essentially, as the president put it.
And in terms of the Republican arguments, what was interesting a while back when Eric Cantor was knocked off unexpectedly in a primary, his opponent ran on immigration as an issue, but from the point of view that he felt that Eric Cantor and the establishment Republicans only wanted immigration, to service corporate America's need for cheap labor. Do you think that argument is going to arise?
Well, I think the various actors have their own motives for supporting immigration reform, but it's at the end of the day, there's a broad coalition of groups and communities and sectors of the economy that are supportive of this. I mean, how many issues can you get? Like you mentioned, Latino groups and evangelicals and the chamber and labor, fully supportive of, and we're confident that at the end of the day, as these debates shake out, that people are going to appreciate that, when we're talking about, immigrants who are here without papers, we're not talking about people who are trying to harm us. We're talking about people who live with us, who are here, who are in our communities, who are in our churches, whose children go to school with our children. And I think it's going to be a fascinating few months as the country undergoes this dialogue.
And Camilla, the president specifically says that his initiatives apply to immigrants who have been here more than 5 years, who have children who've paid their taxes and are able to come out of the shadows and get right with the law. I actually heard just the other day on the radio, I was listening to an interview with a young Latina actress who's in, one of the stars of the hit series Orange is the New Black. And she told this extraordinary story of when she was 14 years old, going to high school, I think in Boston. She came home one day and the food was cooking on the stove, but the house was empty, and her parents had just been gone. It's like they, vanished in some science fiction movie. But in fact, during the day, the immigration authorities had come and snatched her parents, and they were deported to Colombia, and they're still in Colombia. Here she is now, finally, imagine being 14 years old without parents and still having to grow up in the United States alone. And she's made a life for herself and made a career for herself. But she can't share that success with her parents.
Yeah, and her story is not unique. I'm sorry to say. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of children whose parents have been deported under the Obama administration alone. And what impact does that have on a kid's ability to stay focused in school and to succeed broadly? So I think I think what Obama announced tonight, protecting, we're hearing approximately 4 million individuals through this action, protecting people who've been here for 5 years, who have children who are citizens or lawful residents. We think it's going to be just a huge step in the right direction, not only for the immigrants that will be protected, but for their U.S. citizen children and just their communities overall.
So do you think that the American people are more compassionate than they are cynical? I mean, because in effect, this speech by the president tonight was an appeal to the better angels of our nature, and it did have a moral component. He quoted from the Bible saying, "We shall not oppress a stranger," and we were strangers once too. And he also talked about the hypocrisy of ignoring the people who pick the food that we eat on our table and make the beds in hotels, etc. So, what's your sense of as a nation, given the polarization, given the political passions, is, because I did read a poll where I think even after this last election, people who voted in the Republic majority, still there was a majority of Americans who were in favor of immigration reform. I think it was like 57%, and then 39% were in favor of deportation. So those numbers, I think, would indicate that the country's in a better place than perhaps our politicians are.
I mean, this is a polarizing issue, so we're going to see the various extremes are going to stand out. But I firmly believe, having lived this issue myself, that as people who as Americans are exposed to the stories of individuals who are deported despite living here for a long time, of families torn apart, I think as individuals actually interact and become friends with and live with individuals who are undocumented, I think they really start to see that the kind of harm that our immigration system inflicts on communities, and just how unjust our immigration system is. So, I'm fully confident that as we have this national dialogue, which we inevitably will after the president's speech tonight, I firmly believe that more people are going to, come to the side of understanding that this is a population that really deserves relief in the way that the president delivered it.
And just in closing then, what did you make of his remark about, I take it he was referring to Silicon Valley type immigrants who get special visas to come and work in high tech and other cutting edge industries. The president said that we should have a system where the best and brightest don't go back to their countries and create products that compete with American products, but the best and brightest are allowed to stay here. What exactly was he referring to?
Well, I think it's not clear what the policy will be there, but I think he's referring to the fact that we have foreign students that study in American universities, and then there's no vehicle for them to stay here and work here, and even if an employer wants to hire them, and even if their skills are needed. So I think that's an area where the devil's in the details, and we'd be very interested to see what actual policy comes out of the administration on this. But that's one area where it's been widely reported that that there are problems with the system, how the system works. So, like a lot of stuff that the president laid out tonight, we'd be interested to see, the actual policy fixes that he's referring to there.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here this evening, Kamal Esahab.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Kamal Esahab, who is an immigration policy attorney at the National Immigration Law Center, who engages in advocacy and technical assistance relating to state and local enforcement of immigration law and access to legal status for immigrants. His advocacy focuses on the passage of the DREAM Act, implementation of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, and state and local enforcement of immigration laws. We're going to take a brief station break and be back with further analysis of the president's just announced proposals on immigration reform.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Mi amor no tiene esperanza, aunque te esperará. Mi corazón se lanza. Un fantasma corporeal.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Martha Arevalo, who is the Executive Director for the Central American Resource Center, CARACEN, since 2012. She specializes in immigration advocacy work, community outreach, and Latino strategic communications. And Martha Arevalo has extensive experience in the areas of social marketing, public education, immigration, education, civic participation, public policy, and community organizing. Welcome to Background Briefing, Martha Arevalo.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And Martha, what did you think of your fellow community organizer, President Obama? He seemed to have stepped up tonight and delivered a very passionate and heartfelt speech.
Absolutely. I think I really saw the Obama that we saw a few years back, which is very encouraging. I do think that the people that are here today in front of the federal building in Los Angeles are happy that he took this whole move. But we know that this is as a result of a long struggle of people marching, of people taking a risk and sacrifice and coming out of the shadows. And I think that if today we have to celebrate something, we're celebrating that work. We're celebrating that the voices were heard and that the work was rewarded and that the contributions that immigrants make to this country were also acknowledged.
So, Martha, tell me where you are. I think you're at a demonstration, are you not, as we speak?
Yes. It's actually a vigil and a live viewing of the speech in front of the federal building in Los Angeles in downtown. And we have a few hundred people who have gathered here today to really listen to what the president had to say and to begin to talk about what we still have to do. And we still have to work on making sure that the millions of people that are not included in this proposal, that we continue to fight for them to be able to have these similar type of protections, and that we also continue the fight for significant immigration reform, of this broken system. You know, immigration reform that is long-term and that is fair. Immigration reform that focuses on families and not focuses on further militarization of the border.
And Martha Arevalo, in terms of the people that you work with and the community that you serve, as the executive director of the Central American Resource Center, what's your what are you going to be explaining to people tomorrow? Because I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that you know and work with who will want to know whether they are safe in this country and then can come out of the shadows. And there are also going to be a lot of people who will find out that they're not safe and are able to come out of the shadows. So how are you going to manage that?
Well, we're starting right away. We have actually a workshop this Saturday at Carecen at noon, where we're going to be talking about kind of the general information that we received from tonight's speech by the president. We're going to continue this education until implementation and further. We're going to make sure that people know that just because the speech was made tonight doesn't mean that tomorrow they can go to a notario or to someone else to help them fill out an application, because that application does not exist yet. There's still a few months before implementation. We're going to make sure that we step up and that we're ready to serve as many people as possible on day one of implementation. And we have to ensure that people also know that the fight continues for those people that are left out, and for those that are included, they need to join this fight. They need to join this movement to make sure that we continue to advocate for the millions of people who are left out, continue to advocate for the Central American children who are coming because of violence, and that we need to continue to work for the people that are in detention.
So, Martha Arevalo, the specifics of what the president announced indicate that families have had to have been here for more than 5 years for the parents of American-born children to be safe and to be able to come out of the shadows, pay their taxes, and be not subject to deportation. What happens to these children that just arrived, the unaccompanied children who just recently arrived at the border?
Well, this definitely does not include them, but we have been working, at Carecen, we represent hundreds of these cases of these children who, have potentially a number of programs that they could qualify for, but more than likely most will have to go through an asylum process that we know is complicated, complex, and that it could take many years. And so we're going to continue to fight for them. We're going to continue to put pressure in the administration to ensure that those protections remain in place, protections to due process, and further protections that, you know, that the administration and the community continues to push for. It would be amazing if the president would do something like a humanitarian parole for these thousands of children who are fleeing extreme violence in their home country, because he's already acknowledged that it is a humanitarian crisis, and we want to make sure that he lets everybody know that this is a country of compassion and acceptance and a country that protects children.
Well, at this point, the president is going to be facing a tremendous amount of opposition. Already, the Republicans have indicated even talk of impeachment, of suing him, of shutting down the government. So it sounds like the president's going to be slammed for what he's already proposed, as opposed to what he should have proposed, or that you would have hoped he would have proposed.
Well, we definitely know that right now we have a situation in Congress where it's a Congress that doesn't move, that doesn't do much, and that it's not doing the will of the people, that it's not really representing Americans. And so we need to continue to fight to make sure that people, you know, because we know most people in this country believe in reform, believe that immigrants are, you know, the future of this country, believe that this country is a country of immigrants. And so we need to continue to put pressure not only on the president, but on Congress, because they also need to move. Significant changes in an immigration system can only come through legislation. And so we need to continue to work with Congress and pressure them to make sure that they move forward. I believe that eventually, you know, the voters will speak. And that, you know, the Republicans are also thinking about their political future, and that, you know, this is a voice that they should hear and must hear if they want to ensure that their party continues to be viable.
Well, Martha Arevalo, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Martha Arevalo, who's the executive director of the Central American Resource Center, CARACEN. She specializes in immigration advocacy work, community outreach, and Latino strategic communications. And Martha Arevalo has extensive experience in the areas of social marketing, public education, immigration, education, civic participation, public policy, and community organizing. And joining us now is Dr. Manuel Pastor, who's a professor of sociology and American studies and ethnicity at the University of Southern California, where he also serves as director of the Program for Environmental and Regional Equity. Welcome to Background Briefing, Professor Manuel Pastor.
Glad to be with you.
And what was your impressions of the president's speech tonight? He struck me as being very passionate and heartfelt about what he was saying. This was not the passive president that's supposedly out of touch and irrelevant. He seemed like he was he's got some skin in the game, shall we say.
I think that he was both forceful and direct. That is, he was very good at, you're right, speaking from the heart, bringing up the story of Astrid Silva, the young woman who he'll see tomorrow in Las Vegas, who came to the United States when she was 4 years old and is a stellar performer. So there certainly was a passion about that, as well as a passion about the contributions that immigrants make to American society. He also seemed to be really challenging the Republicans. I thought that it was quite possible that he might take an approach that would be perhaps not calling out as much the inaction of Republicans in the House. But he was quite direct about the dysfunction of Republicans in the House and why that was that it prompted him to do this temporary action. The other striking thing is that the program, Deferred Action for Parents, actually involves a three-year sort of reprieve from deportation. Why that's significant is it's a presidential action that extends into the next administration. So a Republican president would have to actively overturn it rather than sort of passively watch it lapse before they came into office.
So what's your sense then of the passions on the Republican side? Already, Senator Coburn, who was a colleague of President Obama when he was in the Senate, made a rather uncomfortable remark suggesting that the president's actions could provoke violence in this country. We already have a president who's been vilified with naked and open hatred for some time now, which is extremely distasteful but quite prevalent. And it seems the idea of adding to that by suggesting that people are going to get even madder at him than they already are just doesn't seem to be very helpful to me.
Well, it's certainly not helpful. It's also the case that I believe that President Obama is now finally frustrated with the idea of trying to work with Republicans on anything positive. He definitely put out the fig leaf of saying we can work on other kinds of things, and there may be avenues and opportunities for people to work together. But no, it's not helpful to say that this is going to provoke violence. There's a couple of different reactions, I think, on the part of conservatives to this. One, which has some degree of legitimacy, is the whole question of the rule of law, whether the president has authority, etc. But it's certainly clear that there's even more anxiety about the idea of taking a population that's essentially in the shadows out of the society in terms of political processes and engagement and creating an avenue for them to come out of the shadows. I think this is a very significant day, though, politically, and it's a very significant day in the lives of millions and millions of American families.
So on another front with the presidential hopefuls on the Republican side, Texas Governor Rick Perry has said that there's a very real possibility that President Obama will be sued over his executive action. And at this governor's conference at which he spoke, he was joined by Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin and Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, suggesting as well that the president was overreaching and was in some kind of legal jeopardy. There's already been talk of impeachment and talk of shutting down the government. So what do you make of this huffing and puffing?
There was talk of impeachment and talk of shutting down the government before President Obama did any of this. So I think it's essentially a lane in wait to have something like this happen. It's pretty clear that they did some careful legal vetting of this. The fact that something that would have been very popular with immigrant rights activists, which is to allow the parents of dreamers to stay in the country, the fact that the president was very clear that that was not going to happen, and that has to do with whether or not he thought he was overstretching legal authority. You know, what he's doing is based on what Ronald Reagan and George Bush did in some repairs to the Immigration Reform and Customs Act of 1986. That is, that what they did was to make sure that parents and close relatives of those who were able to legally stay in the country were also able to legally stay in the country. That's essentially what this is, because most of this, there's really two big elements to this. One is for the parents of U.S. citizens or legal permanent residents, they're going to be given a temporary reprieve, 3 years, from deportation. And there's a bit of an expansion of the Deferred Action for Childhood Adjustments. That is the program that allows people who arrived here at a young age to be able to stay, not permanently. So I think there's some really careful legal thinking that went into this on the part of the president. And I'm sure that he and his lawyers are quite sure that they'd be able to do well in court. But there's another important part of this that for political reasons someone like Governor Perry might ignore. And it is the fact that there have been over 2 million deportations, the most deportations ever under this president. The number of people moving across the border has shrunken dramatically to the point where coyotes, the person who move people illegally across the border, helped to drum up this traffic of the unaccompanied minor children because they were running out of a market in terms of Mexicans wanting to cross the border. And the other big aspect here is that by not going after people who are in the country following the rules, paying taxes, parents of U.S. children, the resources can be diverted better toward border security and toward removing people who are actual threats to the security and of the United States. So this is actually a pretty wise enforcement move as well.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here, Dr. Manuel Pastor.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Manuel Pastor, who's a professor of sociology and American studies and ethnicity at the University of Southern California, where he also serves as director of the Program for Environmental and Regional Equity. His most recent books include Just Growth, Inclusion and Prosperity in America's Metropolitan Regions and Uncommon Common Ground, Race and America's Future. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back and then go to Mexico City for an update on the massive demonstrations today on National Revolution Day. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from Mexico City is Dr. Andre Dorce Ramos, a lecturer researcher at the Communication Sciences Department in Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana in Mexico. He researches the media and political culture, especially in relation to media production and consumption in the emergent digital media landscape, and is the ombudsman with Public Broadcasting Channel 22. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Andre Dorce Ramos.
Hello, Ian. It's a pleasure to be here.
And this is, of course, Revolution Day in Mexico, and it's obviously demonstrations have been timed to coincide with this National Day. And there is a sense of I'm not sure how revolutionary the sense is, but it's extraordinary in a country that has suffered so much political violence, drug-related violence, over the last couple of decades, that the incident in Guerrero with the missing, disappeared 43 students should have been the straw that broke the camel's back, if you will. But that appears to be the case, is it not?
Yes, well, absolutely. I mean, what happened in Ayotzinapa, Guerrero, I think is a drop that is a spark that was probably needed to catalyze a series of protests and manifestations from civil society in Mexico. So it is a rather peculiar conjuncture, and I think a very meaningful one. The government and the Mexican state is certainly, and it's in one of its most problematic times, I think, since they took the presidential chair. So it is certainly a very definitive moment right now, I would say.
And it seems to me that what's at the heart of the disgust that the Mexican people have at the political culture in the country is impunity. And it seems as though, in many ways, the president and his wife, who are caught up in an unrelated scandal over an expensive house that some political crony gave them favorable deals on, that seems to be, in a way, also related, not so much in terms of the disappearance of the students, but in the sense that the elite acts as though they have impunity.
Well, absolutely. I mean, impunity and corruption, I think they are the core of what's going on right now in Mexico. And it's important to consider that the fact that this is it's been a historical problem that we have been, carrying over our shoulders for at least 100 years. And let's not forget also that the PRI has been the single party in the power for the last 90 or so years, probably 80 years. So it is necessarily a sort of cultural practice linked with corruption and impunity. It's also important to consider the fact that in Mexico, at this time in history, 90% of any sort of crime that is committed in the country is not solved. So it is a rather dangerous and ominous figure in terms of how the justice apparatus of the state actually works, or to put it, actually doesn't work. So it's a rather dense and complicated problem that we're facing right now. So basically, the main point is, yes, we seem to have a very complicated articulation between the state, society, civil society, and the private sector that have been, you know, constructing this impunity and corruption for the last 100 or so years. So now we are facing this problem in terms of the many sort of awful crimes that have been happening for the last 10 or so years. Many mothers, unsolved mothers, many disappearances, also torture has been signaled or has been pointed out as a way in which the Mexican state is dealing with these things. And obviously the drug-related crime is also at the core of this.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Andre Dorce Ramos, who's in Mexico City, where he's a lecturer, researcher at the Communication Sciences Department in the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana in Mexico. He researches the media and political culture, especially in relation to media production and consumption in the emergent digital media landscape, and is the ombudsman with Public Broadcasting Channel 22. And we're talking about the demonstrations today on Mexico Revolution Day that are converging on the Zocalo by nightfall, apparently starting from different parts of the city, including the airport, which was briefly shut down, the Zocalo, and I also believe in also the square, where back in 1968 students were mowed down by protesting prior to the Olympics.
Not the local, yes.
Yeah. So this is, I take it, the whole city has got to be feeling this moment and this convergence of anger and frustration.
Yes, there's anger, there's fear, there's frustrations. Frustration. There's been about 120,000 people dead since at least a couple of 12 years since President Felipe Calderon began with the so-called war against drug dealing or narco, la guerra contra el narco. And it's been a bloodshed, and it's been rather difficult to actually learn about the truth and how the state has been dealing with these sort of things. And there's also the collusion and the sort of articulation with the state and some sort of repressive practices that have been occurring in different parts of the country, linked with the way in which the state is dealing with the drug cartels, but at the same time the way the state is dealing with some other sort of public or social unrest in different parts of the country. So it's a rather complicated articulation that it's rather difficult to understand at this point. But what is clear is that people in different parts of the country are definitely angry, and I think we're coming to a point where we're just saying, this needs to stop. This is enough. We can't take this anymore.
So the president himself does not seem to be handling this well. First of all, he was away in China and Australia at the G20 when things came to a head. But it seems that by trying to blame this all on his political opponents, that seems to be like politics as usual. And my understanding is that because the PRD is so implicated, given that this mayor in Iguala, in Guerrero State, who apparently ordered the police to shoot these students, capture them, and hand them over to the narcos. He is a member of the PRD, as is the governor of Guerrero, who just stepped down. So my understanding is that the political opposition in Mexico is really not, they're just as running scared as the PRI government itself.
Yeah, that's a rather interesting point of view. I absolutely agree. There seems to be a general sense that we are at a point where the whole political class or groups and different parties existing in Mexico are not now any longer connected with the people. And probably what you're saying is just a manifestation, a signal that is saying to us that those politicians are no longer trying to understand what's happening in society. They are being not only corrupted by the organized crime, but they are also very sort of only focused on trying to maintain their position within the state structure. So it is in that sense a very significant point in Mexican history, in which there seems to be, in all sort of parties, the PRI, the PAN, and the PRD as well, which is basically the far right, the far the left, and the center, and a mix of both of them. There seems to be a sort of disconnection with the people's general feelings. So not only that, but they also showing a sort of incapacity, or they can't find a way to try to understand what is actually happening in Mexico, not only in terms of the organized crime, but the way in which inequality in Mexico is being reproduced and sort of ignored by the elites in Mexico. So I think this is a very complex sort of articulation between inequality, which is strong. You know that in Mexico we have like a 45 million people in poverty, living in the margins of Mexican society, I would say. And many of those people are also coming to work with the organized crime, but they also doing many other things. So it's not only a sort of, we cannot understand this if we only characterize it as a problem of crime, corruption, or impunity. It's a rather complex articulation of those things. And the political class is not understanding what's going on. And the response of the government, of the federal government right now, is certainly a good, we can identify how the federal government is not able to actually articulate a pertinent response to what's happening. So it seems that whatever they move, they're actually just getting things worse. So in these demonstrations right now in Mexico City and many other cities in the country, and it's also important to say that in many other parts of the world, there have been some signs of support for what's happening in Mexico. People are just expressing this frustration against the way in which the political class is dealing with the whole Mexican reality, if you could say, or we could speak of something like that.
Well, it would seem to reinforce what you've just said, Dr. Andre Dorce Ramos, that the appearance on Tuesday night on television by the First Lady, the wife of President Peña Nieto, who's a former soap opera star,
yes, exactly.
Angelica Rivera, that she appears on television to deny that a crony of her husband's, who got lots and lots of contracts when Peña Nieto was the governor of the state of Mexico, gave her this $7 million house in the wealthy suburbs of Mexico City. And she claimed on television that she had that this was her savings from her 25-year-long career as a TV soap opera star. I didn't see it, of course, but it sounds to me like that's sort of almost political soap opera in itself. And I take it didn't really work.
Exactly, it's kind of what I was saying. First Lady, Enrique Peña Nieto's wife, Angelica Rivera, just made a statement, a video statement, saying, trying to clarify and explain to the Mexican people what's going on with her $7 million house. She was not only, you know, sort of very insensitive but she was also angry speaking at the Mexican public because there seems to be some sort of doubt about the legitimacy of those of that sort of money and the way in which these contracts are being dealt with within the federal government. So it is a sign of the level of disconnection between the government or the political class in terms of what's really important for most of people in Mexico. It is kind of rather absurd and rather harsh to hear the First Lady talking like that to the Mexican people, talking about how much money she made doing telenovelas, which, by the way, is one of the most popular sort of TV programs, Mexican soap operas, obviously. So it seems to be like a whole set of contradictions coming to the fore and exploding in many ways in our faces. And now we have to find a way to sort of try to find a way out, not only in terms of how the Mexican government is going to deal with the situation, but also the way in which Mexican civil society is going actually to deal with this. Because, you know, it's not only the problem about inequality, but it's also the problem about how diverse the Mexican society is and how sort of contested and and fighting against each other is right now in the whole society. So it's a rather difficult problem right now. And it seems to be that at this point, many people are just trying to find a common sort of ground to try to come out of this rather awful crisis that has caused many, many deaths and a lot of suffering for a lot of people in Mexico.
So I take it, Dr. Andre Dorce Ramos, that on Wednesday night, when President Peña Nieto went on television and showered praise on his wife, talking about her bravery in revealing details of her personal accounts, that doesn't sound like it helped matters at all. It sounds like he dug the hole deeper.
Exactly. The hole's been it's getting deeper every time. It's like it seems to me that it is a very kind of telling sign that there doesn't seem to be any sort of right move for the Mexican movement at this point, except to actually go and talk to the people, to the many people that are suffering, and trying to sort of reimagine the way in which the Mexican government can actually deal with this problem. And the signs we're seeing, and the way in which the federal government is reacting, is far from that. So there are no signs to be optimistic about the way in which the government is dealing with this. I think for most of people, the fact that President Peña Nieto went on to China and did this international tour at the time, but one of the most difficult times in Mexican history, it's a very telling sign of the sort of disconnection I was talking earlier. So, to be honest, I'm not very optimistic about this government finding a possible way out of this. It wouldn't be actually too weird or too extreme to think that this government might actually have to step down. It's a probability. It's possible. That's what I'm saying. I think it is one of the many, or the only, very few possibilities I see that we could actually do something good to try to come out of this very complex problem. I don't think it's absolutely likely that's going to happen, but I think it's definitely a possibility. Before that, there seems to be some sort of anxiety about the way in which the government might actually use some public force to try to calm down the public, but that would be definitely a deep contradiction, obviously.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us from Mexico City, Dr. Andre Dorce Ramos.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thank you very much for your interest.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Andre Dorce Ramos, who's a lecturer and researcher at the Communication Science Department in the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana in Mexico. He researches the media and political culture, especially in relation to media production and consumption in the emergent digital media landscape, and is the ombudsman with Public Broadcasting Channel 22. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graeme Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can scroll down on the right-hand side to subscribe to iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.